and our members who are around can introduce themselves, and then we come to the department.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Jessica Jacobs, member of the committee, representing the Free State.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a member of this committee. Mamu Magala from KZN, as a permanent delegation in SOP. Thank you. Mamu Magala, you are welcomed to this lovely committee. We are receiving you with warm hands. DG?
Morning, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Rose Sekes, DG, Department of Communications. I'll ask my team to introduce themselves formally.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and honorable members of the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprise. My name is Temba Piri, DG for ICT Policy and Strategy in the Department of Communications.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Sarah Pomoletelli, also in the Department of Communication.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and honorable members. I'm Ephraim Adom, Department of Communications. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members.
Monali Singhuku, Chairperson, Chief State Law Advisor.
Morning, Honorable Chair and members. Alf Wills, Director Legal at the DOC.
Morning, Honorable Members. Dimara Tomashile, ICT Policy Strategy.
Thank you. Honorable Dan. Can you introduce yourself?
Morning, Chair. Capital, member of the committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and a member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Boskati. I'm the Colonial Advisor for the committee.
My name is Lolisi BC, the committee secretary. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Barbara Lewis. I'm from Legal Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, the Honorable Members. My name is Ndipuzelo Manara, the Senior Legal Advisor to Parliament. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Morning, Honorable Chair. I'm Kamenise Dudley from Telcom.
Morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Zanella Kete from the Auditor General.
Morning, Chair and the Members. I'm Sibomo Fuji. I'm a Communications Officer assigned to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Thandu Mukumba. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Our agenda today is finalization of the ICASA amendment bill. Then the second item is briefing by the Department of Labour on ICT.
from BG.
Thank you very much.
After we have finished with the Department of Communication. Members, you recall that last week there were issues that we were debated, raised by the committee, and we requested the department to go and polish and come back with a final document to us today. And now I'm going to ask the department to lead us, and then after the department, if they, we are satisfied, then we will go clause by clause. Department, over to you, CG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Can I request us to lead us first in regard to this step? And then, yeah, I want to go.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, we're grateful for the parliamentary legal advisors and the state law advisor that have proposed the wording that is going to be projected on the screen. If I can take the Honourable Committee through it, it starts with clause 6, that the existing clause 6 is then rejected and a new clause inserted. It reads, section 5 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. And then I'll only read the new wording. 2 would then read, in the absence of the chairperson, the remaining councillors must, from their number, elect an acting chairperson who, while he or she acts, may perform all the functions of the chairperson. Then, Chair, the second part is just a copy of the existing wording in the bill. So I'll turn to the next page, which is then clause 9, and that is the wording previously agreed, that shortened version. It reads, on page 7 from line 9, to omit subsection 3 and to substitute the following. 3. The quorum for any meeting of the council is a majority of the councillors presently serving as councillors, including the chairperson or an acting chairperson referred to in section 5, subsection 2. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Al. Members, you have been listening. That was what, if that's what, this is what we have requested. Can I give you this chance now to interact? As said from the beginning, Honorable Jacob, are we satisfied?
Chair, I don't have a problem with the new version. The only problem that I have, we are not addressing the issue of the deputy chair. It still gives room to the chairperson to appoint the acting chairperson. But maybe for next time, I don't have a problem with the wording, but I have that concern. Because we have said it would have been better if there was a chairperson and a deputy chairperson. The president appoints the chairperson and the deputy chairperson. But as it is, I don't have a problem. I just have that concern of a deputy chairperson.
I see the chief state law advisor notice. Do you want to say anything, chief state law advisor? Honorable member, that the issue of the deputy chairperson is going to be looked at a later stage. He says now he forgives it.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, we do agree that the issue of the deputy chairperson, it does need to be addressed, like, for example, same as the SABC, but we can at least and deal with it next time.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need to be clarified as to whether there was a problem in initiating the issue of the deputy chairperson, as we have indicated in the previous meeting. In fact, I just want to clarify why didn't we arrange the issue of the deputy chairperson as stated. DPG.
Chairperson, actually the instruction to the department was specifically to work to address the issue of the chairperson. This is how we understood the instruction. There was a debate that if we do not want to remedy Section 5.2, the most desired position would be that you have this deputy chairperson. But because the committee directed that we must address 5.2 chairperson, we regard it to be complying with the instruction. And in that regard, chairperson, because there would be other sections that you have to look at when you also do the issue of the chairperson, of the deputy chairperson as well. So we have addressed ourselves to the request by the committee by addressing the chief concern, which was how the acting chairperson is actually appointed to act. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mavija. Okay. Then understanding the response and agreeing to that, is there still a chance to see to if there is a deputy chairperson? I just want to know. A deputy chairperson, yes. Even though you, the department, has complied as per request by the committee.
I think
yes, I'm not just some confusing issues here. I agree that we requested the department to do it as it has been done there. And the issue of the deputy chairperson, that was stated to cover a chairperson who say do 1, 2, 3, don't do 1, 2, 3, and maybe delegate a person who will encouraging corruption. Because if I'm a chairperson, I will always be saying, whoever, do 1, 2, 3 in my absentia, trying to cover up some other things. Because I should think that for the chairperson to appoint in writing, it encourages corruption, covering up of corruption. So I don't know whether that will be done to have a deputy chairperson, because a deputy chairperson will be doing all the duties. There will be no don't do. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mavija. I'm going to give this opportunity to Honorable Zhao. Before I do that, I think Honorable Jacobs made it clear when he requested the committee to say they can pack it and look at it at a later stage. And the department responded to say, yes, we agree, we will pack it and we will relook at it at a later stage. But I give this opportunity to Honorable Dow to clarify it further.
No, thank you very much. I think you are absolutely correct. Maybe this is an issue that it's an in-house thing. term now, probably it's a matter that we need to look at as members of parliament, how at times we function. Of course, all committees are expected to write their pause legacy issues and even to propose some things for the fifth parliament. And I think one of the things that we need to look at is how do we amend rules of parliament to allow committees to deal with the minutes of the previous meeting even before we get to the business of the day. Because that will assist everybody, whether it be the department or ourselves, but that will allow everybody who was in the previous meeting to have a common understanding. Because part of the issues that I remember the department saying last week is that there's a turnaround strategy or something that will be coming to Parliament with. And one of the aspects that they are looking at, it's to look at the overall functioning of the board. And there will be some proposals, allowing even Parliament to make some proposals on those matters that will be brought before the committee. But based on what is presented before us, I wanted to suggest that we move for the acceptance as proposed. I think there was a considerable attempt really to come quite close to what we had requested. Yes, the issue of the deputy chair would have made it 100%, but there is that revolutionary shift towards what we envisage to see up here. Thanks.
Honorable Sibanye.
Thank you, Chairperson. DJ, I wanted you to apologize first for something outside. I know that you don't see me. I realize that you don't recognize me. Mama, that's something else. But you see what you're saying, what I would suggest then? I think our approach, one of the courts was correct initially, we shouldn't start it to even delete it. This was to check whether the department managed to carry the mandate we gave them first. Then, therefore, I don't want you to go deeper with some of the debate which we had last, because we had enough debate last when we were dealing about this matter. I will propose a way forward that, if possible, we go close by law as procedural, because this thing was debated last. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think now that we are all in agreement, I'm going to request that we go to the bill. We go clause by clause. Clause by clause. I hope everyone has got the bill in front. Honorable Jacobs, I don't like that smile, just say it.
No, I'm not.
Can we make sure, Claudine, not everyone has got a bill. And we want these. I understand the bills are finished from stores. From stores. But I think you must make sure, even when you see that the bills are not enough, you must make sure that you get, the member doesn't have with the bills now. Must we put that? What must we do? Huh? No, our staff must come and tell us here that there is nothing in store. You should have made or alleged me.
I'm going to be balanced at most of the time.
do have the bill in front of us, we go slow by slow. The bill that we have in front of us is bill 18-3 of the legislation. We go to the second page, the clarifying us that this is the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa Act of 2000. Then we go to clause 1, members will indicate if they agree. Close one. Prunavalda, I want to hear your voice. You are so quiet.
I'm not quiet.
Yeah. Close one.
Agreed.
Agreed. Close two. Close two. Close three. Plus 4, plus 5, plus 5, plus 6, plus 7, plus 7. Yeah, I hear you. Just 7. Yes, honorable.
I don't know where. No, seven. The correction is that me. In consultation with the National Assembly. So we said in consultation with Parliament.
We agreed on this clause even before last week, but yeah. Now it comes again the same.
Chairperson, I think there was an extensive explanation about the reporting nature of the agency ICASA, to which Honorable Jacobs at the second sitting also concurred that this issue may not need to change it now. I think it was the senior state law advisor who gave an explanation about the fact that in this legislation, ICASA as a body is actually reporting to the National Assembly Chairperson, and that explanation was clear by the Commission. Thank you.
I'm not sure to say. Do they report to National Assembly or to Parliament? If what has been explained can be repeated so that I feel comfortable that it's correct for it to be National Assembly, can we please get an explanation? Just a repetition so that we understand clearly before we say.
I'll give an example. The appointment of councillors is done by the minister in consultation with National Assembly. And that has been the practice. The interviews are conducted by the relevant committee in the National Assembly. And the performance management system, which has already been developed and adopted by the National Assembly, that whole section gives the relevant committee oversight on the functioning of how the councillors' performance is reviewed, and if there's to be any recommendations by the relevant committee. So, and this is the nature of the bill. It is built in that manner. And what I'm trying to say, Chairperson, is that the explanation which was given on how this organ of state is reporting is built in the legislation as it exists. So if we want to also look at that, there will be many sections that we have to look at. Many sections, not only this particular one.
DJ? So thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to support what DDGP is saying, I'm just going through the Section 5 of the ICASA Act. Constitution of an appointment of councillors of ICASA, number one. The council consists of a chairperson and eight other councillors appointed by the minister upon the approval by the National Assembly according to the following principles, namely, and then I go down again. Number C, following approval by the National Assembly of the minister's recommendation for the appointment, the minister must appoint the chairperson and other councillors by notice in the Gazette. So it's how it's been structured in the ICASA Act, just to support what DDGP was saying.
Hello, Chair, this thing is going to take us quite a few. But that's my only problem. It's going to take us quite a few. I think it was an oversight. Because it's not what do you call this section of institution? Chapter 9. It's not. I mean, the fact that it accounts to... It should account to Parliament. So, wherever the National Assembly, in actual fact, I don't know whether if it is too late now, Chair, but the issue should have been that wherever National Assembly appears, it should be changed to Parliament. Now, if the ICASA Act,
the very first day when we received the first briefing, we did raise this, and I did even say in 2000, when there were amendments, this was debated. It was debated, and I remember even it was agreed that next time when there will be amendments, we will look into this, and I raised it. And if the department recalls very well, we did raise it also. We were in room, whether room 2 or room, committee room 2, and when I asked the question, the issue of National Assembly, that the Mashile, if you remember, you said, I don't know whether you or you said no, that has been taken care of. Because definitely, what's the use then if we call ICASA? That's why ICASA has been like not respecting the select committee. When we call them to come to appear, that's why there has been some like slow movement when they come here. Because they know that the MCOP, it doesn't actually have nothing to do with them. So definitely, I think other things were done before, during that time of the Senate. Now we are the National Council of Provinces. We are part of Parliament, the House of Parliament. National Assembly alone doesn't make Parliament. So it's for the department to actually assist, to make sure that there is a relationship between these two houses of Parliament. And we did raise it the very first day we were in this room. I even mentioned even in 2007, I mentioned, if we can go back to the minutes, that is on the minutes, just that the department, you know, didn't want to. I don't know. If you can't do that, we can really have a mediation. If we can't agree on that, let's get the mediation, we sit down, we call the department, we call the National Assembly. Before you, Mr. Piri, let me give to Honorable Mavis.
I should think it should be clear that we are policy makers, even though the department is doing all the legislation. So we said Parliament, not National Assembly, they report to Parliament, to the two houses. So according to my understanding, it's useless for us to say agreed to this when we are not satisfied. We will not agree until this thing is written Parliament. Then the ICASA thing will be corrected by the fifth Parliament. But we cannot pass this thing with this. Otherwise we are doing nothing as politicians because we are the policy makers.
If we remember well, the deputy minister was here when I raised this.
Okay. I want to propose a quick caucus of the
okay, agreed. Caucus, any second for caucus? Okay. Can we caucus? Can other people go out and caucus?
The understanding.
The 10% of this community communication is Gracias. Department of Communications.
Because the NCOP, and what happens if we reject the schedule that that deals with the Department of Communication, because we don't deal with your entities. What is going to happen? You know, it will implode many of the or allow many of these entities to implode. Would that be correct? Politically so. It wouldn't be. So it cannot be justified or even argued to a point where somebody would just imagine that the manner in which these things are structured, it is correct. If it was an oversight, it was an oversight. It is a policy matter, it was a legislation, maybe where it should have read, maybe didn't pick it up, and then it read must. What does it mean? It means that it must be amended in order to read correctly. So I just thought that we need to emphasize this point. That, let me leave it there. Because earlier on, really, I was quite frustrated by the way the whole issue came through. Thank you.
And also to remind the department that if you remember the DM also agreed here. She was seated next to DDP. She even said herself, actually, when she came to Parliament, when she was still a member, she couldn't understand actually the NCOP. But now that she's working with the NCOP in the department, she now understands that the NCOP plays an important role. And when we look at all this, we must also realize that we've got provinces. And it doesn't mean that ICASA doesn't operate in provinces. Yeah. And the senior state law advisor, please, I'm giving you this task from here. Like last week you were, you know, emphasizing on the bill. On the bill. And now I'm also still emphasizing to say we are Parliament. The NCOP, much important as the National Assembly, the NCOP. I will die for the NCOP, definitely. You know that. I will die for the NCOP because if the NCOP is not recognized, it's just as we can stay at home. People must know that the NCOP exists and you are the people who must make sure that the people, the public, understand that there is this House of Parliament that has got the interest of the provinces. So I'll go back to clause 6 to say, for the record, no, clause 6, for the record, we only said we agreed, but I want for the record to say we agree with amendment. Clause 6, as you have written on this paper, honourable members, we only said we agree. We forgot to say we agree with amendment. So can we? Are we agreeing with amendment? Clause 6.
Clause 6, new clause, the definition, 6, section 5 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. We agree with amendment. Agreed? Okay. Agreed. And then clause 7?
Agreed.
Clause 8?
Agreed.
Clause 9? No, I think you are, I said clause 6, then clause 7, clause 8. Honorable Jacob said agree. And then now clause 9, with amendment. Clause 9, agree with amendment. Clause 10,
agreed.
11, verse 12, verse 13, verse 14, verse 15, 16, 17, 18, 19,
present serving as councillors, including the chairperson or an acting chairperson.
to in section 5, subsection 2, report to be considered. Anyone who supports the report? Honorable Lenzan, seconded by Honorable Mabija. I now sign on behalf of you, Honorable Member of the District. That concludes our meeting with the Department of Communications, with an understanding that everything that we have raised as the committee is going to be looked at, so that the other people or us, when we are appointed members of this committee, we will take it where we are living it now, that the parliament is parliament. Senior State Law Advisor, you were part of us, and we believe that if I go to the National Assembly, I'll still fight for the NCOP. So you must do the same. You must fight for the NCOP. Don't go that side and look at us and forget that you were once part of the NCOP. Thank you, DG. Thank you, everyone. The meeting stands adjourned with the Department of Communication. Lena. Yeah, remember we should have finished this one last week. And the meeting of the Department of Labor was scheduled. So now, because we thought this is going to be something small, GG.
Honorable Chairperson, on behalf of the Department, the Minister of Communications and the Deputy Minister, I would sincerely like to thank the committee for the four bills that you have been able to support us in processing them. And I also like to thank the team from the department in how they've conducted themselves in getting us to where we are. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, I commit that as a department, we're not going to wait for the conclusion of the ICT policy review. We will start looking at all these issues in terms of looking at all our bills so that we can do a proper work. Because it's not just about changing the National Assembly to Parliament. It's how things are going to work. I think those are the real issues that we need to look at. Thank you. So we'll do that.
Welcome the Department of Labor under the leadership of the acting DG, Dade Morutova. You like acting, hey? We pray that you next time they say this position is yours. Dade Morutova. Dade Morutova, good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee on Labor and Public Enterprise.
I think we know each other. We heard when we were introducing ourselves. We're not going to go that route because time is really against us. Over to you, Dade Morutova. We didn't want to cancel this meeting because we wanted you to come and update us on the information and communication technology of the Department of Labor. Over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to be brief and Now, parallel to that, honorable members will recall that we made a presentation of a five-year ICT strategy that was developed that was going to include how we're going to employ new staff across our IT and all that. Now, just before that, we ran into all sorts of problems. The first one was as a result of the interpretation of one section of the agreement, and basically after going through the state law advisors and all that, honorable members will remember that we had the minister having approved a structure, and as we are about to fill in all those positions, legal teams including the state law advisors confirmed that the department is obliged to take on staff that were working on this contract under section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, because some of the staff that were in Siemens and EOH were staff members that the department transferred to this company when they were given an IT contract. Secondly, we found ourselves in a situation where CETA was not ready to take over this ICT support services in line with the CETA Act. And the new strategy, like we said, was still in its initial stages. And EOH, because of the suspension that we had not completed some of the developments that they were supposed to have had. And we were facing a situation where beyond the 30th of November, we're not going to have ICT support. And also, at that stage, the CIO of the department resigned. And that's when that was the situation end of November, which actually made everyone panic. However, as the management team, we did a number of things. Firstly, the question of the transfer, we went to EOH trying to see if we can get an agreement, and we couldn't get an agreement at that stage because what EOH wanted to do was to force the department to take everybody that was under Siemens. And the issue there was that Siemens was providing services at the SABC, DPS, Coca-Cola, South Africa, that is IBS and all that. And the dispute was around the number of people that we were supposed to take. And we went to court and fortunately, when they realized that the matter was very serious, they asked that we, have some kind of a settlement, which we did. And basically, the agreement was that the department will only take those people that were working on the Siemens contract and only at the Department of Labor. And we took that agreement and made it to be the order of court. And that's how the matter was taken out of the law. And we went back to the department as the senior management because we had to do something looking at the end of November. We convened a meeting with CETA, National Treasury, and State Law Advisors, mainly to map a way forward given the end date of November, readiness of CETA to take over some of the functions from EOH, and to deal with the court process and to clarify some of the procurement processes with National Treasury. I must say, Honorable Chairperson, this meeting that we had in mid-November with the key departments, as we have outlined, including DPSA, managed to pave a direction for us, because key to the agreement was that on some issues, other departments felt that the department must take its own decision here. But CETA did indicate to us that while they may not be ready, they were prepared to assist us in the near
into a new agreement, not an extension. But the new agreement had to be very tight and had to be very specific. And secondly, in terms of the legal obligation, we had to take over the staff and we had to move as quickly as we could. And we also had to make sure that in the process of taking over or entering into a new contract with EOH, we don't flag the procurement process. So Treasury in that meeting agreed that given the situation that we were in, they will grant us the necessary assistance and approval. And that CITA then said to us, in those areas where they already have service providers and in terms of the Procurement Act, that is the CITA Act, they will be able to assist us going forward. Now, out of that, we then got the CCMA, because the situation with EOH was very tense. And on the 29th of November, I think for the whole week, the senior management of the department stopped working to address this problem. And we had a situation with the CCMA's assistance where we negotiated and concluded an agreement at 3:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. And basically, the whole idea was to make sure that COH complete all IT applications that they were already paid for, that they did not finish without additional pay in the 6 months ending until end of May 2014. Secondly, we had to agree and we worked out the details regarding the transfer of staff, because they wanted to pick and choose and dump some that they didn't want, and we also wanted to make sure that the people that we take over will assist us going forward. And we also agreed on the payments with regard to debts and the question of invoices that we had to get. And we also met additional services that EOH was going to provide in the next 6 months, that is until May, given the fact that we have taken over staff. The services mainly covers a number of areas. There are those that are in the IT operations, solution and maintenance, governance, and the management areas, and so on. However, what we have done was to make sure that we clearly identify those aspects that our staff are going to do vis-a-vis what EOH is going to do in the remaining period. And we also agreed on a governance structure to make sure that we are able to oversee the management of this process until end of May, where we have a meeting on a monthly basis, which is chaired by myself and is attended by senior management of EOH and the entire executive of the department, all managers and commissioners of the two funds. And beyond that, we also have a management team that is looking at day-to-day issues. This is just a graphical representation of the governance framework and how it works.
can say to you, honorable members, is that I think having staff members that are our, that we can rely on, has changed quite a lot now than we had. And the staff that we transferred, we tried by all means to make sure that they were not disadvantaged in terms of benefits and salaries. We tried to pack them in line with the current public service arrangements, including things like their leaves and so on, so that there's continuity where others had private pensions. They are making choices to transfer those to GPF and so on. As for the operations, we can say to honorable members that the panic that we had in October, November, currently it has disappeared because we have a seamless transition, and I think we have an understanding in terms of EOH. They know that they are going. It's not a question anymore. And what we are now doing is to identify and agree on those areas that EOH is still providing to us, and look at how best CETA is now going to take that process forward. I'll come back to that issue. And we can also say to all to honorable members that you can go to any of our offices, save for those areas where there are cable problems and so on. As for the IT, up to now, we are satisfied to a certain extent that the clients of the department are not worse off, given the action that we had to take. Some aspects have been moved completely from EOH. For instance, the state, the service desk, we moved it out of this entity to CETA, and we work directly with CETA instead of them. And currently, we have not experienced any major disruptions. There are challenges here and there, but the CETA and Mr. Nomvalo himself is very much centrally involved in this project, and he is making sure that through the SLA, service level agreement that we signed, they're able to monitor and manage the performance. There are issues that were part of the residual aspects that were not done by EOH. This includes the migration of shelters to employment centers, which are now going to be called protected employment enterprises, so that we manage the systems and we are able to make sure that SDF, in terms of licensing, infrastructure, and so on, do not end up paying additional costs, because if we are paying for the same licenses, what we did in the department is that the funds, both UIF and compensation fund, including the department, will operate on a basis of single license. And once SEF is also migrated, we believe that we'll be able to save the entity a lot of money that they are paying on separate licenses as well. And the only thing that we wanted to bring to honorable members' attention is that I think when the ENE process was embarked upon, we had an unfortunate situation where Treasury took about 30 million on the in respect of compensation of employees from our budget, and the feeling at the time from Treasury side was that we had a structure on ICT and we're not filling positions as quickly as possible. Without understanding the sensitivity of the court case that we're having, if we filled the positions at that stage, currently we'll be sitting with about 130 or so members that were appointed under the allocation that we received from Treasury, and with the 197 settlement will be sitting with another 99 people. And I think Treasury now, with the subsequent engagement that we have had, has now realized that this is going to cause a serious problem on the budget of the department. And we have taken this matter up at a high level, and we believe that either during the adjustment estimates, Treasury will give us money, because currently we are going to have to pay salaries of the 99 people that we took from other areas, and we will run into a serious deficit. Although they have given us money in the 2016-17 back, but I think the problem will be from next year. And the other amount related to inspectors, we are not here on that issue. However, we will also raise the matter, because the feeling was that we're moving slowly, and yet on the other hand we have to comply with the public service administration processes in that way. Now, in brief, and as summary chairperson, the only issues that we are now doing is to map up the staff that we've taken into a proper organizational structure, and to make sure that they sign a necessary performance agreement in line with the public service, and to roll out certain aspects of our IT strategy. Where we are identifying service gaps, for instance, those things that are remaining with EOAH, in our agreement with CETA was that by end of February, we have a meeting scheduled for next week to agree with CETA on the procurement. And what we will do is that we will simply highlight to CETA that these are the areas that EOH is continuing to provide services in, and CETA will then take those areas, and through the CETA Act and their procurement process, run tenders and assist us with the adjudication and appoint service providers that will provide those services, but under their management, because they have the competence in those areas. And things like licenses and so on, we have agreed that as the department, that's not our competency. CETA will negotiate those licenses as part of the broader government process, so that we can have maximum that is bulk package like all other government departments, and that we don't incur additional costs. So with CETA on board, we believe, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Select Committee, that the problem that we had on IT, we have turned it around to a certain extent. And thank you.
Thank you very much. This is the information that we have long been. Can you switch off? I think since 2009, since we started as this committee, when we were dealing with your report, we've been all along asking questions on this issue, and today we have received the information that we have all along been asking for. Members, that was the presentation from the Department of Labor. Over to you. Is there anything that you want to be cleared on? Honorable, I see members are satisfied. They are happy about the report. Honorable Sibande, followed by Honorable Mabija. You are excused, Honorable Dam. And you are happy. We wanted, Honorable Dam.
Yes.
We didn't want this term to go over without this information. So this information, we have received it and we are happy. So we now, you know, we will live in peace.
Honorable Sibandi.
Thank you, Chairperson. We want to welcome the report, but with some small clarity, but also to raise a concern of a lot of the acronyms. Time and again, when the department comes and briefs us, most of the departments, they are using all these bombastic words. For an example, I will understand maybe if you talk about DOL, you spoke about P, you spoke about EOD or any acronyms. Please, if you wanted to work to this move, you better clarify it, make it simplified, then so that members can. I'm helping you for the next coming generation, because you might have problems. Right, nevertheless, Jefferson, you know, somewhere when he spoke about the transfer of staff under Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, there's a place where I want to clarify. There was a bulletin to, I don't know which page this, you said this was further hampered by the lack of information provided by the service product provider. You see, my concern, that means that the department was misled by the service product provider. Therefore, I wanted to find out whether is the department still utilizing the very same service provider. If it is still utilizing, why are you utilizing the person who's misinforming you? To an extent, the following bulletin is talking about the negotiations broke down to an extent, whatever, that you appeared in the Pretoria High Court. I wanted you to find out whether there were whether there were financial implications. If there was financial implication, how much was spent by the department? Because by the misinformation from the service provider pushes you, how much was spent, and who paid for the expenses? Because you know there is this thing that happens time and again. We are complaining in the different departments about the issue of giving other people to run what the quality. Most of the time, instead of doing the job personally, you have assigned other people to do the job well. You see? You are providing consultants most of the time instead of yourself doing the job. That's why it's a problem. It means that at the end, we end up paying a lot of money. And then also, somewhere in current status, you said all employees transferred were all employees who were directly involved in the IT. Okay, fine. But my question is that then, I wanted you to find out that what is the status quo when they were transformed to the department, the period they started to work. You started a fresh counting of their services or they continued with the services they had, because that itself, as the time goes on, is going to have a negative impact in terms of their service, the time of service which they served in the department. So I'll put it there, maybe I'll come later on.
Honorable Mabita, followed by Honorable Jacobs and Honorable Kunabad in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. My input is no longer valid. Thank you.
Jacobs?
Yeah, Chair. I think Honorable Sibande talked about this issue of backrooms. Maybe I should get this explanation. What is this animal EO? If I can get clarity on that one. And also, this issue of CETA, how does it relate with the department, because I don't know whether it was during your tenure whereby women's later UH was used, because right now you are relying on CETA to give you an assistance. So I don't know whether you're able to answer me that one. Why in the first place CETA was not used? Because it appears now that the job that is done for IT, it is an inside job. It's no longer being outsourced to other service providers. So if we maybe can get that clarity. And also, this staff that you have taken over, do you have budget for them? Because I think it's an additional staff that should be paid from your coffers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I haven't got a lot to say. That is only the last page, next steps. You mentioned a lot of things there, a lot of points, but there's no time frames allocated to all these points, and I think that is very important, that we must have time frames, because it is a finalized human resource processes. There's no time frames when it will start and when it will stop. Finalize and implement operational plans for IT service delivery. Refine and roll out of the IT strategy. So what I want to see on this whole page is there must be time frames and cut off dates. And then there's only one, and that is on the last bullet point there, which is an agreement with CIPA, and that is in February 2014. But there's no cut off dates on all the others. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Chairperson, something slipped my mind. Of which I wanted to make a follow-up on it. You see, there was a point which I raised that about the service provider which had the lack of information, something like that. Chairperson, somewhere, as I indicated, I think it's page 15, slide 15, relating to where, no, it's not this one, current status. I don't know whether we do have the same, this one. Current status. In operations. You see, Chairperson, my worry, the point which I raised earlier on, they say there, yes, there you are. IT services gaps identified and mitigated. Direct service contracts signed with service providers. So that is a contradiction, as I raised earlier on. How can you sign a contract with the person who misled you? And if I may ask, who are those service providers which you which you have accepted? Because to me it's a contradiction. Earlier on, they said some of the contributing factors were the fact that they were misled by the service providers. But at the end, they signed, continuously signed contracts with the service providers, which misled you. To me, that's a problem. And then, as I indicated, who are those? As I indicated, I wanted to appeal once more. Why so much consultant? Why so much duplication? And also, Honorable Chairperson, the first one, seamless transition of IT operation during the transfer and transition process. You see, that is a sign. This is what the other people are doing. You hire me as a consultant, then because I want you to dance for me, I take it out. And then you employ me, I produce it again. That is possible. It's written by you in your presentation, there, bulletin one. May you please elaborate more on that? As I indicated, Mama, I don't want to whatever. I can come with a lot of questions to be clarified. But at this moment, I'll pause there.
Yeah, thank you very much. Even though we are happy about what is happening, but it would also have been helpful for the presentation to point out how the ICT transition has improved service delivery, especially around fraud cases, etc. And then also, if you can tell us whether the transition has been fully implemented. Last year, if you remember, in tabling the strategic plan, the committee was informed that the ICT transition was at 50% completed. By now, everything should have been like 99%. Can you tell us what is happening here? Because we are happy, but with this concerns that we are raising, and we are raising this to actually assist the department to polish this. CFO, did I welcome you? You came late, and the other people, I don't want to mention them, who came when we are about to finish, but it's fine. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will also give Mr. Maduna and Mr. Fikashi Sikasen an opportunity to respond to some of the questions. Honorable Chairperson, let me apologize up front for the acronyms. Had we had the time, I would have gone through and explained them in detail. I was under the strict instruction to keep this short, but nonetheless, the triple P refers to the public-private partnership contract that we've been having in place that was concluded way back in 2002. Now, as to whether we could have used CETA at the time, I think it's debatable because it depended on the state of readiness, and I think at the time CETA was not ready at all. And CETA is beginning to get its act together now, especially when Mr. Novak, who was a former accountant general, joined it. We've seen quite a number of changes in even some members of parliament who are working now full time in the state information. Now, former members of parliament who are now full time employees, I think there has been a lot of changes. Now, let me say, I think the whole idea of taking over stuff, I did indicate that we had a structure. Obviously, we had a process in 2009-2010 where we were about to take over ICT on our own, and then there were some changes in terms of the approach, but I think towards the end of 2012, we came again to the same conclusion that we needed our own internal IT and we should not have gone through the whole question of outsourcing, and that is why there was a process. Initially, there was a process to try and outsource certain functions, and later on, we came up with a structure, and then eventually 197. Basically says you have to take over all these people. That is why the whole question of the structure, the whole question of outsourcing of services was completely left out. The information that was not provided by Siemens, I did touch on this issue slightly, but I think providing us with actual information per se, in a manner that was basically, I think the issue that we were confronting with was that when EOH, and this is the name that we were trying to look at, it has a long name that I, even themselves in their document, they don't want to use it as a result of internal buy-ins and buy-outs and so on. They just refer themselves as EOH as a company. But the issue is that when they bought Siemens, including its operations that were not confined to the Department of Labor only. Now, when this question of Section 197 came up, unlike the Department of Labor, for instance, we don't know what arrangements the Siemens had with the SABC, South African Breweries, DBS, and so on. What we were disagreeing on was a situation wherein EOH wanting to use the provision of 197 for Dole to take on more stuff than we should be taking, including other stuff that they may have decided that they are no longer useful and so on. So to use Dole as a dumping ground and to pick and choose other people that were working on the Dole account to remain as EOH staff so that they continue with their dependency, because we would be sitting with people that are not familiar with our systems and so on. So the fight was basically around it and an exchange of information around it, because they'll give us a name of a person and we'll say, no, but we don't know this person. The person we know is so-and-so and is not in the list. So that is the process that eventually led us to court. Now, as to whether this court process took over, took off, it did not take off. I think EOH realized the seriousness of this matter, and immediately they agreed to settle out of court, and they then took the responsibility to pay the cost of the court. We didn't pay, so they paid the cost, the legal cost, and that is why they then agreed that we continue. Yes, Honorable Sibande, your question is valid. Why did we continue with this company? I did indicate that we had a meeting in November with various government departments. With a number of departments before we embarked on this. We knew that the deadline of the 30th was coming. We knew that post the 30th of November, we won't have ICT support at the department. And that is why we convened a meeting with senior people, DBGs and CEO of this department, to say we have a number of challenges, and I think I did indicate in the previous slide the challenges that we're sitting with. The time was going, here are the list of challenges that we had, and we then said, we went through all of them to say that this is the reason why we called you, and we want you to assist us on the way forward. And I think it was out of the advice and the decisions of that meeting to say, look, department, despite the fact that this company has not worked with you properly, we advise you to enter into a very, very tight contract, which is not going to be more than 6 months, because they had to finish applications that they were already paid for, that they did not do. And we had to agree that they will do those things without additional pay. So if you terminate the contract, it simply means that you let them off the hook. So the reason for extensions, among others, included that they finish all those applications that they were supposed to have finished, and that we didn't have time to finish the process of transferring of staff. So we had to manage the process and all that. And I think the agreement to continue with them was informed by the challenges that we had at the time. It was not a simple agreement, and if we had a way out, if FISA was ready to take over, would have moved away from that contract, especially in the manner in which the company has dealt with us. But I think the company also drastically changed, because they have since realized that the manner in which they've worked with the department is also going to make it very, very difficult for FITA to consider putting them on the list of IT providers for government, especially given the history with the department. Overnight, that's where we saw a complete change and cooperation on a range of things. That is why they also, amongst others, agreed to develop all those elements without additional pay. There was a question on the direct services with service providers. Now, the direct services that we signed with the service providers amounted to things like licenses. In most of the applications that FITA was doing for us, we had to procure those licenses directly through the service provider. And what it meant was that a service that would cost us R1 million, EOH will add their administration markup cost that amounts to another R500,000 and so on, and will end up paying for a license at R1.5 million. So what we did, where there was a straight case, if a license comes from Microsoft, we put EOH aside and went straight to Microsoft and said, we are using your applications, we want license directly, and the same with SAP and all that. So those were the services where we entered into direct agreement with the service providers, because even FITA said to us, you cannot operate certain applications without license, it's illegal, the state law advisors told us. So the reason why we are saying in future, FITA is negotiating with all these companies, the whole government or most of departments you serve. Now, it will become easy for FITA to negotiate for SAP licenses and do bulk buying for the whole department instead of individual departments negotiating with the license provider. So that those are the areas where FITA is basically assisting us, and that is where we then said there are other aspects, and I think Mr. Vikash will talk to those on areas where we need external assistance. Just a question around the service of the transferred staff. Now, when the staff were transferred, they went with their pension, and I think the only impact where this thing is likely to have on their service is around the pension. Now, we invited the GPF, the Government Employee Pension Fund officials, to take them through the government employee pension, and they gave them a number of options. Those employees who left the department joined Provident Funds and all that, because some cash their money and use it for other things, but others kept it in the funds. Now, they gave them options around buyback. What it simply means is that if these people are prepared to transfer back, and some are doing it already, their pension from the different private pension funds into GTF, they can buy back their years of service depending on the amount of money they have. So the lesser amount of money you have in your provident fund, the lesser years of service you will have, because you cannot claim long years of service if you do not also use the money. Some, obviously, for reasons known to them, have debt and
thinking of something that we are not encouraging and start as a new employee with the department. But I think in all instances, the consequences were made clear to them so that they understand the implications of this aspect. Whether we have a budget for the staff, I think I did indicate that we were paying on a monthly basis in the region of 16.5 million to the service provider, and that included the whole question of procurement of hardware, that is computers, cabling and all that, including the development and all that. With the end of the contract, that money that we're paying is what we are now using to maintain all these other things, because it's no longer going to the service provider. The only proportion that was taken was the amount of money set aside for staff. We still have the money. We did indicate to Treasury. Treasury took away that money because they felt that we were not moving fast in terms of filling vacancies. Now, I did indicate to honorable members that we were in a very difficult situation. Had we gone ahead and filled staff, I mean appointed staff, about 133 with the money that we had because we were underspending. What I did say was that given the ruling of Section 197, as of today, we'll be sitting with about plus minus 130 staff that we employed using the money that we set aside, plus an additional 197. Now, if you were in our position, I'm sure you would have had to make judgment. Yes, Treasury penalized us for not utilizing the money, but we didn't utilize it because we had a legal problem. And the legal problem confirmed our action. Now we are taking 197. We did not employ those 183 people. We had meetings with Treasury. They accepted that that was a mistake on our part, and we are looking at the adjustment estimate to correct that problem. As of now, we are having to cut here and there so that we can carry the staff that we are having. I think I did indicate that the impact, Chairperson, on service delivery, had we not done what we did by the 30th of November, however painful, however unsatisfactory it is to deal with this company, today the Department of Labor, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, the Compensation Fund will be complete closure because we will not have emails, we will not have any systems of payment of people until we could have a service provider. So with all the problems, we had to find a way of saving the department, and that is why I'm saying honorable members in their oversight in the work that you do, you can work in any of the Department of Labor. We still have challenges, but at least on the ICT you can say with confidence that we managed to rescue the ship. Thank you. And others will ask other on time frames, Vikash, you want to talk to that, and then if there are other things.
There was a question on the last slide around time frames for the Honourable Mr. Kronewald, around how long is it going to take. We've already started with most of these processes. Some of these things are done already, but the entire process we expect to finish before the end of the financial year. So going into the new financial year, we will have everything stabilized, and we will start the new budget, new resources, and a new operating model. So everything will be working smoothly. There,
there was a question from Honourable Chairperson myself, what percentage of the transition has been completed. I would say we had 90% of the transition completion because we've taken over all the staff already. We've continued with IT service. There's continuity of IT service. The only thing that we need to finalize is this last slide on the next steps. We've already identified the service gaps and we've started engaging with CETA to finalize it. So that will be the remaining percentages, addressing those service gaps once this contract is over.
Or is there anything that you wanted to say?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the responses, but nevertheless, somewhere there are touch-ups which were to help us. Ma'am, somewhere in the presentation they say, you see, as I indicated about the issue of duplication, which is worrying me, spend a lot of money. Now this site are people, just imagine this site is people from the department, they would all might be doing the same job. This site is CETA, this site is service provider. I know sometimes if you talk about service provider, you mean people who are specializing or bringing something with 1, 2, 3. But nevertheless, I'll put an example here. I'll read two from your input. The other one in the current status, operations service desk. Bulletin 2, service desk staff transferred from the service provider to the Department of Labor are based at CETA office. And then you said, the last bulletin, I don't know, as I spoke about the acronyms, the SLA, the SLAM, and SLAM with CETA is in place to monitor and manage the performance. To me, that's duplication. And when you go ahead and back, which is worrying me, we have asked earlier on whether the issue of transfers of the services was done in the like, which was not clear. There is a specific way, you know, where you illustrated about the issue of how the money was used in financing the ICT strategy. You spoke about the allocation of 13 million rands were therefore reflected in respect of composition of compensation. I thought they are Taliban's here. So my problem is that I don't know whether the man, this man was already issued to them or still. Yeah, I was waiting for you. Yeah, so if they can clarify us, you know, because here they are speaking about the allocation of 30 million rands, which reflected in respect of compensation of employees and goods and services to cater for these expenses. If you can clarify us on that one. And then also, which I need a clarity about the issue of vacancy somewhere, somehow. The last bulletin in the same page, you say, the last one, you said during the 2014-2015 allocation processes, however, the allocation made by the Department of Labor through the unbundling exercise were removed from the budget due to the fact that the positions created to absorb staff in terms of the Labor Regime Act as Section 197 remained vacant. My clarity, my sincere clarity, which I request from you, you already observed some people, absorbed some people from 1, 2, 3, and still you speak about the vacant, which is still remain. I need a clarity on that one, because to me, you know, this doesn't hold water, because it seems that, for example, that indicated earlier about the duplication, you do have a staff already. So now we absorb some people from somewhere. At the end, it's to speak about the heads. This remains the head. I'll put it there. I'm sorry to ask for this question.
DJ?
Okay. No, thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to Honorable Sibani. The agreement with this company was signed on the 29th of December, 29th of November 2013. One of the agreements was to say the process of transferring staff must be effective from the 1st of December. So we commenced with the whole question of getting their qualifications, CV, everything, 1st of December, and that process was completed end of January 2014. The budget allocation, normally the management letter that we receive comes to us in October from Treasury, that is end of October, indicating our budget. That is the budget that the Minister of Finance is going to table before the end of February, beginning of March. Now, what they've done is that I said we had money 15.5 that we're paying this company. So when the contract ended, we then decided that this is how we are going to use this money. What Treasury did was that out of the money that we've unbundled, they took 30 million out of it because they said we're too slow in filling vacancies. And I did indicate to honorable members that we, because of the legal problem that was still going on, we could not, as end of October, fill positions because of this problem that we have had, of the legal problem, as whether we are going to take the 197 people, if we are going, we are going to take X EOH people, and if we are going to take how many are they going to be, what skills levels, and so on. So we were still in that process. And Treasury, in the meeting that we had with them, they did acknowledge that it was a mistake on their part to act in the manner that they did, because when they finally got to understand the legal problem that we're sitting with, they themselves realized that what they did was wrong. And that is why there is commitment, and we met even at the ministerial level to say this matter has to be corrected. And what I did say was that it could be that it will not be corrected in the current allocation and maybe in the adjustment estimates. That is when this problem is likely to be corrected. Just on the service desk, the service desk was run from EOH. When we transferred staff, the department did not have the necessary infrastructure. However, CISA had the infrastructure. So it made sense for us to place them in a government agency that is established in terms of a law passed by this parliament to do that work, to do that work for us. And I think there are a number of other things, such as housing of our information and all that, all those things. We don't have hubs that we house information. If anything is to happen in the Department of Labor, the building can stand down. But the minute we have a new building, the minute we connect points, we'll be able to retrieve all our information. And that is because all the information that we have in our system is housed at CETA because of the infrastructure. Yes, there were problems initially in CETA, but there is improvement that we've seen. And the question around the duplication, I don't think it's duplication in that sense. All along, there's been a number of three areas, even during the duration of the current contract. Our information is not housed in the hubs of the private company. Like all other departments, and for security reasons, even though we had EOH, there was a role that CETA continued to play. And the fact that currently the department is having staff, the staff that we took over did not come with some of the equipment and the infrastructure that was housed at EOH. So that is why, for those aspects, we continue to use EOH for those services. And that is why we did indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that we are meeting with CETA next week. going to put tenders. Where CETA can provide those services, they will do so. But where they can't, CETA will provide and adjudicate tenders for the companies that will provide those external services, because it's a common given. I think what we have now is the core that is going to do maintenance and all that. If maybe the development, which is a once-off thing, we believe that we don't need very expensive people for that process. If they come in, do the design and development and leave, and we have skills transferred to the staff that we have to run with the maintenance, because CETA will make sure that as they do the development and design, our staff are involved so that they can then take over the process. So I think in this whole ICT, there are a number of components that are within our control, that are within CETA's control, that CETA also agrees that this is the expertise of private organizations, and it's best that you source it only when you need it. And the fourth component is licenses, which none of us cannot do anything about. We have to oblige and pay the licenses, and that is across the whole company. But maybe Mr. Maduna, you want to come in on the budget?
Yes, sir. Probably just to amplify, probably also clarify on the 30 million. As acting DG has indicated, by October, November, December, each year, we get a letter from Treasury indicating how much is going to be allocated to the department. Subsequent to receiving the letter, we are then requested to indicate how we're going to spend the money in the department, just before the Minister of Finance make his speech in terms of the finances. Realizing that the PPP is coming to an end, we took from the unitary fee that we're paying the service provider, we took 30 million and put it for one under compensation of employees, because the idea was we're going to have internal capacity for the ICT. That we had to do before the start of this financial year, which is 2013-14. However, because there was going to be there was this looming court issue around the transfer of employees, that amount, that 30 million remained unutilized from April to November up until we were clear on the Section 197. Treasury is monitoring our expenditure on a daily basis or on a frequent basis. So they recognized this amount that was the department that was not spending, and they decided to remove it from the department. At that point is when we concluded the legal process of taking the employees over. This amount was meant to cover for the internal capacity, which was then going to be taken over by the staff, which was going to be utilized to pay the staff that we have taken over. So the allocation letter that we got in November last year indicated that from 2014-15, that allocation on that line item is no longer going to be there. But what they did not recognize is that it talks to the employees that were taken over. For now, we still do have the money to pay them up until the end of the financial year, which is going to be in March. But from April onwards, that's where we got a problem. And the accounting officer indicated that we have brought this matter to the attention of Treasury to say there is a problem here, because we now have the people in our establishment. So that amount that they've taken over, they have to make a way of maybe putting it back to the department, because it talks to the salaries of the people, of the structure of the ICT. So I'm hoping that the talks at a high level are going to yield effect in terms of putting the money back, because it talks to the payment of salaries for the structure of the ICT.
I see members are satisfied. This one is for the road, the bad course. The labor office in Hazyville. It still don't have necessary resources, and my office is still like a labor office. that office still open once a week, if not twice a week, but once a week, and it gets full. So I thought, Ms. Muyilo, njengoba nawe uye e-national, awunokhohlwa ngasemuva. Mentioning Hazelview, knowing that there are so many other offices around the country that are still, that are like that one in Hazelview. So please, I know the plan has been submitted, just do the right thing. We are busy with elections. We don't want to deal with labor issues in constituency offices. Let them be there. We will check on other things that the labor offices can't handle. Thank you so much. CFO, mbuke wena kakhulu ngoba nguwe lophethe mafa. Hamba nolungisa. Resolve this center. Thank you very much. It was nice seeing you in 2014. And the meeting sent agent. Members, thank you very much. The meeting, enjoy your day tomorrow. I see you are looking at me, you want to go and do the hairstyle. I know men also do the hairstyle. Thank you very much, Demikin Stephen. DG, is there anything you want to say?
Thank you, and we hope to see you in the next term, all of you.
We are there. We are coming back, all of us. Coming back, we see everyone. Thank you.